You in the home 6010.
Hello and welcome into Fantasy Focus Football. Today's show is presented by Geico. Switch to Geico and see all the ways that you could save. Field, Mike, and Daniel holding it down on this Thursday, September 15th, second week of Thursday Night Football. Absolutely pumped. And this is a heck of a Thursday night game we're going to be able to have. Really excited to be able to talk about it. But first and foremost, we have major pressing issues.
Yeah, we have a statement to put out there, right? It's kind of a solemn moment for Daniel and I. We have to get this out there. There are some rumors going around, I think, about this.
There are a few.
We'll talk about it right out of the gate here.
Yeah, let's address it now.
It all happened Tuesday night. There was an incident. We went to a local bar for some trivia night.
We did.
Some ESPN colleagues and us. And I get a little choked up about this.
It's okay. I got you, buddy.
Yeah. It's a tough time. And there was a football category.
Okay.
Fantasy football question came up.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, something happened. A man stood up when they asked the question and he walked up to our table and went to the bathroom. Nothing happened there. And then there was a scream.
That was normal. Someone screamed.
There was a scream, but she just knocked her drink over.
Yeah, it was on the other side of the bar. It wasn't anything near us.
But then they asked the question and we got it wrong.
What?
Field, here's a question. Are you ready for this?
Let me see if I can get it right.
Which team, it makes me sick just saying this.
Painful.
Which team has the highest salary cap in the NFL?
Which team has the highest salary cap?
Mm-hmm, in the NFL.
So I'm presuming this is not a trick question because NFL teams all share the same salary
Tennessee
cap.
Tennessee Titans. No, you're wrong. It's Tennessee Titans. The Tennessee Titans have the highest salary cap in the NFL.
Care to elaborate?
Nope. No one has a clue. This is a mystery.
If we asked about it. We were like, guys, is that possible? That's not how it works.
My answer was all 32 teams have the same salary cap.
Yeah, and they actually pushed back and said the answer
was
Tennessee Titans.
They were just like, it's the Titans. They just did not care.
But I'll tell you what.
Everyone got it wrong, so.
You put two nerds in there that care about football and you ask that question, boy, were we heated.
Well, so here's the thing, though. Let me tell you a couple things, is that there are a few different ways that some people evaluate the salary cap. And this is nerdy stuff, so if you want to fast forward 30 seconds, I don't blame you. But the NFL does have a set salary cap that is fixed for all 32 teams every single year. However, you are allowed to roll over salary cap space from 1 year to the next. So the fixed number for this year was $208.2 million. But let's say you were the Jaguars, who had a ton of salary cap space left over from last year. You roll it over to this year. The number might be your sort of operating salary cap number might be $245 million, an extra $37 million more than the league baseline. Some teams actually have negative salary caps as they roll over. We'll get into that on a different podcast. But even if you include rollover cap, like the Titans aren't close to the number one team.
That's why we
looked that up. Absolutely illogical.
Yeah. So, by the way, Daniel kind of butchered that because that was actually not the fantasy question. I was going to bring that up.
Oh, that wasn't the fantasy question?
No, that was just a ridiculous question. We were scratching our heads over the whole
thing. What was the fantasy question? I don't even remember.
The fantasy question was, which quarterback has the most fantasy points in a single game all time?
Well, the Tennessee Titans.
Stop it.
I don't know. My guess would be there's got to be like some absolutely absurd, either like a Michael Vick 5 touchdown plus a rushing touchdown game. Patrick Mahomes has thrown. Oh, you know what it was? Eli Manning against the Saints a few years back.
Your first instinct was right.
Michael Vick.
Okay. It was Michael Vick. So we were thinking that, right? We had that name. And then at the exact same time when we were going through our, like, the ideas, you know, Dan Marino, Mahomes, like, at the same exact time, me and him go, Dante Culpepper. At the exact same time. So we're like, that's our answer.
We got to Dante Culpepper.
Wow. So it was Michael Vick. We're embarrassed. We got it wrong.
See, these are the best thing in the whole wide world is being a dad. It's been the coolest thing ever. The other reality is that when you've got a kid and your buddies are like, you want to go out to trivia on Tuesday night? You're like, I can't.
Yes, I want to, but no, I cannot.
I can't.
Yeah.
And I was also asleep at like 8:30 on Tuesday night. Back-to-back nights, Sunday and Monday. Our buddy, JJ Zacharyson, who, of course, late-round QB on Twitter, coined,
Love
I think
JJ.
He trademarked, East Coast Dads.
Yeah.
I knew what it meant conceptually prior to this season. We're a week in. I am like a shell of myself. I slept... Yeah. I went to bed at like 8:30 on Tuesday night. I was like, what is going on? My wife was like, do you want to watch a show? And I was like, absolutely not. I want to go to bed. 8:30.
Absolutely not. I'll tell you what, if you want to get pumped up, if you're feeling like Field, head on over to our YouTube chat where our buddy Kyle Soppy is hanging out, holding down the fort with everybody. Kyle, I know we always have a bunch of stuff in there, so please make sure that you are good to our people in the YouTube chat today.
Of course, I got you guys covered.
Okay, let's talk football.
We got a lot of things. We got Thursday night football, and most importantly,
game preview.
Wait, are we still allowed on the show?
It's a game preview. After we got that,
well, because we've already started the show, we have this rule: once you start, you can't be taken out. But yes, going forward, it will be rebranded as the Fantasy Focus Football Podcast, starring only Field and Stefania.
Oh, that doesn't bother me.
I mean,
enjoy retirement, gentlemen.
I did get two of the music questions right, so I feel like
of course you did. Yeah.
All right, let's talk about Thursday Night Football. We have got the Chargers, oh my gosh, and the Chiefs. This is an unbelievable matchup. This is going to be so much fun to be able to watch, especially on Thursday Night Football, where it feels like we are used to not great matchups. But our lineup locks from this. Obviously, Justin Herbert and Patrick Mahomes, the quarterbacks across the board. You've got Austin Eckler. You have Travis Kelce as the number one tight end this week. All of those guys need to be in your lineup every single week, not just this week. And Mike, I think the first question comes in where with Keenan Allen going to be out for this game, dealing with a hamstring issue, Mike Williams would seem to fill in that lineup lock spot. But what we saw last week was only four targets and a bunch of that bust version of Mike Williams. Is he a lineup lock for you here in week two?
Mike Williams is. He's 12th on my board. So if I have him, I'm starting him unless I'm totally loaded at the wide receiver position. I know he had a down game. The perimeter receivers, for whatever reason, struggled against the Raiders. I think that was probably a little fluky. I'm not too concerned about it. He had four targets for 10 yards in that game, but he played 91% of the snaps. That's a big number. We obviously like that. And look, last year he averaged 8 targets a game. That's double what he saw last week. He's going to get back up there. And two, Field has made this point a million times, and I'm sure I'm taking it right out of your mouth.
No, please do.
He's boom bust. We know this already.
This is five plus years of this.
Yes, exactly. We're used to this. He could come out today and have 160 and two touchdowns, and we'd be like, yep, that's about right. Right. So
the other thing about it is that it's not like there's indicators of which week he's going to be up versus down. Yeah. Like, hey, he's been matched up against Jalen Ramsey this week. You can expect him to be down. No, it's like sometimes he'll be playing against like prime Patrick Peterson, and he'll go for like 160 and two touchdowns, and then he'll be facing off against like
Rocky,
a ninth string.
You've seen an Anthony Everett.
Yeah, and you're like, wait, what? So yeah, this is, we talked about this. This is a marriage. This is the marriage you signed up for with Mike Williams. Yep. If you drafted him, you are committed to playing him unless, as Mike pointed out, you have this absurd wide receiver group. But I would argue that for tonight, I have him in a lineup lock category. And by the way, if he duds again tonight, I'm going to say it again next week because at some point he's going to have that breakthrough game. The only part that was curious about week one was there was no vertical shots for Mike Williams.
Yeah.
Very few. Mm-hmm. Which maybe that was because the Raiders did a good job of pressuring Justin Herbert, and so they were unable to throw the ball down the field much, but his average depth of target was just 4.3 yards.
Yeah, which is certainly rare. I will say this, it kind of helps his cause, and this will apply to Josh Palmer as well. We're going to talk about it in a second. Yeah. But Trent McDuffie, first-round rookie, is out for the Chiefs. The replacement last week was seventh-round rookie Jalen Watson. So that should be an matchup both of these guys should be able to take advantage of.
Heck yeah.
And certainly boost their value a little bit.
Yeah, Field, to Mike's point, we talked about Josh Palmer. He's somebody that we would have had as an easy high-end flex play, I feel like, when Keenan Allen was out. But last week gave us all, it looks like, a little bit of a pause in spite of this really good matchup against the Chiefs.
Yeah, we've been wondering about Josh Palmer. Talked about him a bunch during the preseason. I know Mike loved him during the preseason. Mm-hmm. It's kind of one of those late-round lottery tickets. The idea being, if something happens to Mike Williams or Keenan Allen, you can expect a near full-time role for Josh Palmer. As we saw last year when Williams or Allen was out, Palmer became a near every down player for the Chargers. You have Justin Herbert as your quarterback. You can expect good things to happen. I've got him as wide receiver 36 on my board, which is a whole one spot behind Mike. What I will watch tonight will be whether it's Josh Palmer or DeAndre Carter as the sort of nominal number two wide receiver for this offense. Carter played more last week than Palmer did, but once Keenan Allen got hurt, it's pretty much the same. Carter did have a solid training camp. He is good in the slots, but ultimately, like if you're playing Josh Palmer, the idea is like he's talented and he has Justin Herbert as his quarterback. Like the chance for him to have 8 catches tonight is very real.
Yeah, Carter didn't play more, I don't think, in terms of being on the field. Like you saw a little more volume, but after Allen left, Palmer was on the field for 17 of their 19 pass plays.
Yeah, right? After Allen got hurt, Palmer and Carter, I think it was like 17 to 14, wasn't it? 17 to 14
like
snaps.
Yeah.
So they're basically the same timeshare after the injury.
Yeah, whenever they're in 11, you're going to have Carter in the slot for sure. And that's where Keenan Allen usually is, right? Yeah. So that could have some value. Super deep leagues, maybe you're thinking about Carter, right? But not a guy I necessarily want in my lineup. I think it would be Williams one as we have it ranked. Palmer would be two. And yes, I do think Palmer should be started. I think he bounces back. This is why we drafted him, right? Because of this potential opportunity. I know it's a little scary after week one, but it happens. A lot of good players had slow week ones. It happens. It's just a matchup. It's the defensive scheme. Williams and Palmer are set up for a big game in what could be a 35-31 game tonight, right? It should be high scoring. It's my highest projected game. So I like Palmer a lot. If I have him, he'll be in my lineups.
Any other Chargers that you're starting tonight? Gerald Everett got in the end zone last night, but I think it's going to be tough to have him as a top 10 or 12 tight end for me on most weeks.
For now, yeah.
Yeah.
Tight end two for me right now.
Agreed. I upgraded him to like a front end tight end two, but I don't feel great starting him yet.
Four targets last week. So again, good things happen when you have Justin Herbert, but they think there are enough options that have already been drafted that even if they had a disconcerting week one, you're going back to the well here in week two with those tight end options.
Hey, let's go back to the well in week two with Clyde Edwards-Helaire field. How would that make the Irish Twins sound? How would that make the Irish Twins feel?
Well, we probably don't have a choice, to be clear. No, we are going to go back to Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Well, he was really good last week, and he was super efficient in the number of, given the number of opportunities he had. As I know Mike wrote about, and we've all talked about, we don't know over the course of four quarters exactly how much work to expect from Clyde Edwards-Helaire, because he barely played in the second half this past week because the Chiefs were wiping the Arizona Cardinals at that point. So really good things that we saw from Clyde Edwards-Helaire last week included goal line work and passing game utilization. Ran the football effectively. I've got him as RB24 on my board. The reason why he's not higher is that we did see Jerick McKinnon last week. Mm-hmm. He played a decent, he actually had the same number of snaps in the first half, 18 apiece. And Isaiah Pacheco was limited to basically just cleanup duty last week, but
he looked good in cleanup
duty. He did look good. If he steals five or eight snaps in the first half, a drive perhaps, then all of a sudden that impacts the value for CEH. But a strong start for him merits low-end RB2 consideration again.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I was thinking about this last night. Am I too far? Is my gap between Edwards-Helaire and Jerick McKinnon too wide? Because the first half and the first three quarters, they had the exact same number of snaps played, right? Yeah. So what if they come out and this is a competitive game tonight, which we expect, and it's 50-50, right? It's like that Gordon, Javonte Williams sort of usage, not the Edwards-Helaire has the lead and McKinnon's kind of the 1B or the 2, and Pacheco doesn't play, right? We don't know for sure, but I will say this, Edwards-Helaire handled 7 of the first 8 touches by the running backs in the first quarter before it was 14-0, and then they started working other guys in. So those are the kind of things we're trying to figure out here. But, you know, as you pointed out, you have him as a flex. I have him as a flex. And Daniel, you're a little higher, but we're starting him.
It's a tier for me.
Yeah. We're probably starting him. I would say this, though, if McKinnon's on your waiver wire, not a bad guy to add to your bench for two reasons. One is, as we just mentioned, he was splitting snaps basically with CEH. And two, if Edwards-Helaire kind of struggles and McKinnon continues to play explosive like he did in the playoffs and he kind of takes the lead and takes 60%, he's going to be a must start in fantasy for sure. So he should be on rosters.
Yeah. How about speaking of must starts? I feel like we're getting there. We're getting there. It's been week one, small sample size, but Juju Smith-Schuster, I was really pleased to see 8 targets and not just his 8 targets. I was pleased to see where those targets came on the field, Mike Clay. It wasn't that dink and dunk like we felt like we saw from Ben Roethlisberger and the Steelers. They were targeting him downfield a little bit more often than they had in his previous seasons.
Yeah, about 10 yards per target in this one, 79 yards on 8 targets. He was terrific right out of the gate. He was, whereas Edwards-Helaire was kind of limited, which makes sense for a running back. Once the game is out of hand, the pass catchers were in the game for most of the way. We saw Mahomes down the stretch. I think Henny came in for like 5 runs or something at the end. So
yeah,
Mahomes played a lot, but 32 of 41 routes for Juju was tied with MVS for most on the team. Marcus Valdes-Scantling, of course. Mecole Hardman was the 3 with 25 routes. And then Watson and Moore, Sky Moore, of course, the second round rookie, they barely played 7 routes apiece, right? So those are your 3. That's what we expected coming into the season. Sky Moore's role should increase as the year goes on. But for now, it's Juju is, I would say, I have him 20th. I would say must start. Like, how do you not start him after what we saw in week one in this offense? Valdes-Scantling's the 2. More of a borderline flex in deeper leagues. And then Hardman is the 3, probably leaving him on benches for now.
Yeah, my ranks are reflective of yours, Mike. The only thing I will say is that Patrick Mahomes sort of called his shot before the season. Like, it could be a different guy each week. And if tonight Marquez Valdes-Scantling ends up as the highest scoring wide receiver, I'm not going to be totally blown away by that. I do have Juju ranked highest. Again, there's the largest sample size of quality football under his belt out of all 3 of these receivers. And you have Patrick Mahomes. I just said this about Josh Palmer. You have Justin Herbert as your quarterback. Good things can happen. We expect a ton of points, and someone's got to catch passes other than Travis Kelce. You might have them all, though.
Yeah, yeah. It's good secondary for the Chargers, too. Could be concerning, but again, we think this might be a high-scoring game. See if J.C. Jackson plays. But
seems iffy for him.
Yeah, to he was back at practice, which I was surprised. I thought he would just miss this game, but he won't see much of Juju, who's going to be in the slot a lot. Now, they move receivers around, but you don't have to worry about like a shadow of Jackson on Smith-Schuster. That's just not the way that Jackson's going to be deployed.
We're not going to be doing this Thursday Night Football game on CSS DFS, which is coming up just after this show. However, this showdown slate on DraftKings would be so much fun, having to pick between these Chiefs and these Chargers. Let's do that now, actually, when it comes to the over-under. Right now, it looks like the Chargers.
454, yeah.
It's 54.
Chargers are four-point dogs.
Four-point dogs. Yeah. The over-under is 54. Which side are you taking?
My score is a slight over, which I'll say my score until we pick the game, but I'm slightly above it.
Let's do it.
Okay. I have the Chiefs winning by 28-27.
Okay. I have the Chiefs winning 34-31. So Chargers cover, Chiefs win.
I want to take the Chargers.
Go for it. Okay. Do your thing.
I'm going to take the Chargers 31-28.
There you go.
It's in Arrowhead, right? So that was my lean towards
it. This is one last important thing, by the way. Almost as important as the bell. Harrison Butker's out for this game.
Oh, yeah?
So if you haven't been paying attention, your kicker, Harrison Butker, is out.
So drop him at Justin Reed.
Yes,
right?
Justin Reed has been added to kicker eligibility. We kid. Matt Amendola is kicking for the Chiefs, formerly of the Jets, and played for the Houston Texans briefly this preseason. So go grab a different kicker if you have Harrison Butker.
Do kickers matter? Have they mattered at all this season far?
No, long snappers matter, not kickers.
Oh, man, I was watching the Titans-Giants replay last night, just so frustrated.
Yeah, it was on. Yeah, I saw that.
Oh,
it
was man, not great. Like just the decision-making on just settling for like insanely long field goals this year. I mean, years past too, but especially in week one, so frustrating.
I don't know if this makes me evil, but I saw this TikTok of this young Titans fan, probably like 6-7 years old, and his parents are videotaping him as they attempted their last field goal to win the game. This poor kid stormed out, just started cursing up a storm. I'm like, oh my God, it was he like slammed the door. You start punching things. I'm like, this poor kid.
That was me watching it last night too. Yeah. I mean, I have no investment in either team. I was still just super annoyed at the decision making.
It was poor decision making. All right, Mike, we're going to talk about some wide receiver cornerback matchups. He's a And wide receiver cornerback is brought to you by Geico. Switch to Geico today and see all the ways that you could save. And we're going to start with some positive matchups with the Arizona Cardinals. Last week, I wanted to see more from Hollywood Brown. Instead, I saw a whole lot from Greg Dortch.
What?
Mike Clay.
Greg Dortch.
Shout out Dan Graziano.
Yeah, he called that one.
He did call that one. Yeah. But this week, however, Hollywood Brown, AJ Green, Greg Dortch, maybe Rondell Moore, if he's healthy, they're going to get the Raiders secondary. And I believe we saw them last week. Also have some difficulties.
Well, they did well on this perimeter. I was surprised, and I'm playing with some fire here, as I wrote in my column, because they did do a good job against the perimeter in week one against Josh Palmer, Mike Williams, we just talked about. But I still look at the depth chart, and I'm like, this should be a plus matchup for perimeter receivers, and maybe it will be. Maybe that was a fluke. So Rock Ya-Sin, who basically lost his job in Indianapolis, right? He couldn't hold down a top three job, ended up in kind of a rotational role last year. They move on, trade him to the Raiders. Now he's basically their number one because Anthony Averett started last week, played most of the game on the perimeter. He's out.
Yep.
He's replaced by Amik Robertson, who was a fourth rounder a couple of years ago. So they're kind of just trying to hold on to, again, hold down the fort in the perimeter right now. And I think it should be a plus matchup for Marquise Brown, who's 80% on the perimeter, and AJ Green on the other side. Nate Hobbs is their best corner. He'll see a little work outside, but he's the nickel. He's the slot. He's going to be inside against Greg Dortch. I think that's going to be the toughest matchup for these three receivers. So again, I'm feeling good about Brown and Green. And if you're in a 16 teamer, I guess, but you know, we'll see. Cause this is a tricky one after we saw in week one.
I want to see more from Hollywood Brown. I'm not as high on AJ Green. However, to your point, it's just the position of the way that it works out. I would love to see Hollywood Brown take advantage of this matchup. Mm-hmm. On the other side, Mike Evans has taken on Marshawn Lattimore, it feels like, 50 times, and 49 out of those 50 times. Seems like Marshawn Lattimore has some kind of something to say about it.
This matchup always reminds me of Mike Clay, because the idea of wide receiver cornerback matchups has become more and more prevalent. I see several people in the industry doing it, and I applaud the effort, no doubt. But the person who, at least as far as I'm concerned, is the godfather and the originator of wide receiver cornerback matchups is Mike Clay. And I remember it might have been 3 years ago, where Mike Clay posted something to the effect of like Mike Evans when being shadowed by Marshawn Lattimore last three games. And his stat line was like completely neutralized. It was like, let's say 2 catches, 4 catches, 3 catches. And every member of the entire Saints Twitter jumped on it. Marshawn Lattimore himself jumped on it. And I was like, OG, Mike Clay, OG. If you're not reading this column, all you're doing is decreasing your chances of winning on Sunday. Yep. Mike talks, I listen, Mike start talking.
Well, first of all, thank you. That was awesome. And by the way, the other side of this matchup, awesome too, right? Because we're going to see Michael Thomas, who is a history with Carlton Davis, and we don't have the graphic
Twitter
here. But
we can't actually show what Carlton Davis tweeted at him. This is a
the
family
for Michael Thomas. Yeah. The last time they faced off, and it was three times that year, and he did a great job against Thomas too. So I'll throw that out there. Both sides of this, no matter which offense is on the field, it's going to be fun to watch these one-on-ones. But yes, Lattimore against Evans has been a showdown now for a half decade. Lattimore has shattered him nine times since 2017. And look, just to show you what it has looked like, think about this if you have Evans in your lineup. These are the results. Okay, so back in the day when Lattimore just started out, 5 for 55 for Evans, not bad. Okay. Then 7 for 141 and a touchdown.
Really that's good. Wow.
That's really good.
Against rookie Lattimore, did a nice job. 4 for 86 the next time. So far, so good. Then 0. No catches. Next one, 1 catch for 2 yards, although he did score a touchdown. 4 for 64, a little better. 1 catch for 3 yards and a touchdown. 2 catches for 48 yards and a touchdown. Then he held him to 1 for 14 in the most recent meeting. Evans left that game injured after a while. But over the last 3 years, he's been lucky to get 10 yards. I mean, he is really – Lattimore has been winning this matchup. If you have Evans, you've been bailed out by the touchdowns, which is probably why you can't even think about sitting him. But DFS, you're staying away, and you're certainly nervous if he's in your lineup this week.
Anybody can say things to the effect of every player gets up for every single game. You know, we're pros, and there's only 17 opportunities during the season. Let me tell you something. The Saints get up for their matchups against the Buccaneers.
Yes, they
do. More than every other game throughout the course of the season. It's personal between these two teams. It's become increasingly more personal since Tom Brady became the Buccaneers' quarterback. They have played, obviously, times during the regular season and the postseason. The Saints have manhandled the Bucs for the most part with Tom Brady under center during the regular season. Marshawn Lattimore seems to take it personally against Mike Evans. He's still in lineups, but if we wake up on Monday morning and Marshawn Lattimore is on Twitter because he deserves to be, because he's saying, I'm the man again, don't be surprised. By the way, Mike Evans limited in practice yesterday. Mm-hmm. Every Bucs wide receiver was limited in practice basically yesterday. So let's keep an eye on those. I actually have Tom Brady as a non-starter this weekend, and I'm putting my money where my mouth is. Carson Wentz is starting over Tom Brady in a league that I play in. The only league, I think I have Brady in two leagues, and the other league, I'm not sure my options are as great, but I've got Carson Wentz ahead of Tom Brady in my lineup, so I'm putting my money where my mouth is here on that Tom Brady call.
There is concern about Brady. The one thing I'll say is his last three games to the Dome in New Orleans, his games in New Orleans have been good. He's had 20-plus fantasy points in all of them.
Okay,
it's just at Tampa Bay where he's really struggled the last few years against the Saints. I don't know what it is.
Interesting.
And maybe that's a fluke. Yeah. It could be. At some times, he's looked really frustrated. Obviously, they have offensive line and receiver
concerns.
So if you add it all up, I get it. Yep. I think Wentz is a fine streamer against... are they playing?
I don't want to talk about it. All right, let's talk about the 49ers and the Seahawks. We barely got to see anything from the San Francisco 49ers wide receiving core. Even though Debo did have 8 targets, it was just a downpour that game. But we got to see plenty from the Seahawks, Mike, as I mentioned on the show yesterday. They gave up 433 total yards. That was fourth worst in week one. Is this a spot where these wide receivers are going to be able to unlock themselves here in week two?
Well, first of all, it's weird to doubt the Seahawks secondary because they have a player named Michael Jackson and a player named Kobe Bryant.
Yeah,
so, like, good point. That's a legendary name.
You're right.
That's something else. But Michael Jackson is one of the starting perimeter corners here for Seattle. He was a fifth-round pick years ago, kind of a journeyman, right? And they're kind of forced to put him in the starting lineup right now. And then Tariq Woolen was a fifth rounder this year. And again, those are their starting outside corners right now. They lost DJ Reed last year. Trey Brown's injured right now. And they have Justin Coleman manning the slot. So again, this is a situation where with Debo Samuel and Brandon Ayuk, you have the edge, right? You should have be in really good shape here. And we saw that last week. Now, Seattle tried to protect themselves against Denver, right? They were playing with the lead for a lot of that game. They were in too high in cover three over 80% of the time. They're just backing off basically. Beat us short, don't beat us deep. And still, Jerry Jeudy had 4 for 102 and a long touchdown. And Cortland Sutton had 4 for 72. They both had pretty good games.
By the way, Sutton had like a 45-yard DPI penalty too, right? So
exactly.
A play Tariq that would have been a catch if Woolen had not tackled him.
Yes, right. Exactly. So even in that situation, they both had big games. Ayuk, 87% perimeter. Debo, 81% when he's not in the backfield. They're going to be outside against Jackson and Woolen throughout this game. They have the edge. This should be a big day for this 49ers offense.
We have Debo Samuel ranked. We don't have Brandon Ayuk ranked. Is that a situation here where I need to see more of it from Brandon Ayuk, or is it because the depth at wide receiver is so big, or is it a little bit of both of them?
And Trey Lance.
And Trey Lance.
I mean, just as a thrower, and it's hard to say, right? We're not using last week as a particularly effective evaluation skill for either of the quarterbacks as a thrower. But last year in his two starts, Trey Lance didn't exactly let the world on fire as a thrower. Training camp, that was a big conversation point. I love Ayuk. We all love the talent. But as we know, it's also, as he's been a star, he's also been a non-factor in fantasy. So we're sort of, I think, just sort of meeting in the middle right now with Ayuk.
Yeah. By the way, I don't always get a chance to do this a lot, you know, because we're just busy working through the week. But I was like, I have to watch every play by Trey Lance last week, right?
Better or worse than you thought?
A lot better.
Yeah.
I thought it was solid. I think the criticism of him, I mean, by the way, if you ever need something, like if you want honest feedback, go to Mike Martz. Like he has you covered. Like, I guess, or at least he'll tell you what he's thinking for sure.
Yeah.
But I thought that was way excessive, right? Because
that sounded personal.
Lance made some really nice throws in that game. He did not have many opportunities. Some of the bad throws, he was heavily pressured or running around in massive puddles with pouring down rain. Their comeback effort, I mean, it was a monsoon. It really was. I mean, it was pouring. That guys could not run routes. No one was open. I'm watching, like, I'm not a film expert, but I'm watching his guys downfield when he's being pressured. There was no one even close to open most of the time. And when guys were open, every single time he hit them. Like, I mean, there was one touchdown or missed touchdown opportunity. I think it was like Tyler Croft or someone. Can't remember who it was. He threw like a Ross Dwelly, one of the backup tight ends, and he missed him deep for a touchdown. I mean, other than that, he was pretty good. I thought he was fine. So he's going to add value with his legs.
Yeah, huge week.
Yeah, I think so. And to answer your question on Ayuk, I wasn't super high on him coming into the season because I have them projected for 700 fewer passing yards than last year because Lance is going to run the ball a lot more than Jimmy Garoppolo did. That's a big difference, and that kind of limits Ayuk's output. So that's why he's lower for me, but it is a good matchup.
All right, let's talk about one more matchup here, and that's Brandon Cooks from the Texans taking on the Broncos. Patrick Surtain, anytime someone goes up against Patrick Surtain, feels like it's going to potentially be a tough week.
By the way, Patrick Surtain, right? Remember, like, his dad was Patrick Surtain. And we all called him Surtain, like, his whole career. And then at some point, he corrected it to Surtain. So now we actually know that one, right? We got
T-A-N.
Yeah,
you were saying
Surtain. I said Tain.
Yeah. It took, like, his whole career before we got that. Yeah. So Pat Surtain has looked the part, and by all accounts, he's the next, or one of the next star corners in the NFL. And he did not shadow last year, but of course it's a new coaching staff. And he did shadow in that game on Monday night against DK Metcalf on him on 23 of his 28 routes, including all but one of his perimeter routes. And Metcalf didn't do much. 5 catches for just 28 yards against Surtain. So he was targeted a lot in the short range. Couldn't really get downfield against him. When he was targeted, he caught it, but just not for many yards. So Surtain's good. He's going to shadow Cooks, who lines up outside about 80% of the time. It's going to be a tough matchup here for Brandon Cooks.
Only saving grace might be that the Broncos, as I've mentioned before this week, are 9.5-point favorites at last check over the Texans. You would expect that Houston would have to throw the football aplenty this week if they are down big against Denver. That being said, for like a year and a week now, the Texans have kind of been overachieving in, like, well, you know what? They've had their moments where they've overachieved. There were also games last year where you were like, oh, wow, the Texans are down by 40 at halftime. If it is more of the latter, then it could be a positive game trip for Brandon Cooks. But I'm with Mike. I mean, the number of cornerbacks that are stars in this league that were tweeting about Patrick Surtain the second during the game on Monday night, Darius Slay amongst them, being like, this guy has already arrived. Like, watching him on film is worth it. That to me was very telling.
Heck yeah. All right, we got our good friend Adam Schefter coming up next, but first we're going to pay some bills. Mike, why don't you go ahead?
All right, football season is back, and man, do we have a good one tonight. Justin Herbert, Patrick Mahomes,
and
Miller Lite.
Yes!
Does life get any better than this? Spoiler alert, no, it doesn't. When it's Miller time, like tonight, right around kickoff, you know you're getting a great-tasting beer that is low in both calories and carbs. Since 1975, Miller Lite has been a mainstay in the stadium, at the tailgate, and in your fridge. No matter how your team plays, it's the beer that's always a winner. And Miller Lite tastes like beer because if you're a beer lover, you don't want watered-down flavor. Mm-mm. You want the original light beer. Football season brings back the big hits, so reach for the biggest hit of them all, Miller Lite. You can find Miller Lite pretty much everywhere beer is sold, or go to MillerLite.com/FFF for delivery options near you. It's Miller time. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 96 calories and 3.2 carbs per 12 ounces.
Inflation and rising interest rates are forcing many to rethink their personal investing playbook. Tackle the challenge of finding the right income strategy as you navigate this period of volatility. At Global X ETFs, our funds look beyond what you might have considered, offering solutions for investors seeking to increase or diversify the yield potential of their portfolio. Visit globalxetfs.com/income to learn more.
He's Field Yates.
That is indeed my name, but the name that really matters right now is the one and only Adam Schefter, who's kind enough to join us here again on the Fantasy Focus. Schefter, good morning.
Good morning, Field. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Hope the same for you. And Schefter, before we can look forward, we have to look backwards because you joined us last Thursday and you tipped us off to something that was going to bear out until an injury derailed it. Kyren Williams for the Rams was going to play a lot. As you look back on what happened last week and then look forward, has your impression of what role he might play when healthy has changed?
Well, what happened here, Field, is that they went into the game thinking that the running backs would be Darrell Henderson and Kyren Williams, that Cam Akers would be the third back. And lo and behold, on the opening kick, Kyren Williams suffers an ankle injury that requires surgery that's going to knock him out 8 weeks, maybe more. And so those carries that we were waiting for, and I started Kyren Williams in my ESPN fantasy lineup and got a zero. The carries that we were waiting for, and I believe they would have been vast, never materialized because he obviously suffered that injury. And I can tell you the Rams at that point were very high on him and had a role carved out for him, and he was going to have a pretty good night that night. I expect that never came to be. And so now they're back to having Darrell Henderson, and we heard Sean McVay last week try to challenge Cam Akers, saying that he needs him to run with more urgency. You don't normally hear a coach challenging a player like that. So I think there's some dynamics here with the Rams and their backfield that they're still sorting through. And I think that loss of Kyren Williams, who a lot of people hadn't heard of last week, I think was a little bit more significant than people realized during that game and going forward.
He was kind of like your 2022 version of Elijah Mitchell last year, who, again, you put him on our radar, and after Raheem Mostert got hurt in week one, he became a breakout star in fantasy. You mentioned Cam Akers, and yesterday Sean McVay made a comment to the effect that, like, in the few days since their week one loss, Cam Akers has already responded positively. Do you get any sense at all that there is opportunity for Cam Akers, even if not by design, but by necessity, to play more for this offense?
Well, that's it. There has to be a role for Cam Akers because they're down, really, to the two backs. They're down to Darrell Henderson, who has never been known for his durability, and they're down to Cam Akers. So the people who drafted Cam Akers, the Rams who are relying on Cam Akers, they have to get some production. And Cam Akers, we all know, is talented enough to take that opportunity, run with it, and capitalize on it. That would be the hope you'd have right now. I really believe if Kyren Williams had stayed healthy and been the type of player the Rams thought they had, that Cam Akers would be in that number three spot, and that Kyren Williams would be up there, but it didn't happen. So Cam Akers, by necessity to begin with, has to have a role, and he's good enough to capitalize that and really become a factor now, I believe. We'll see how he handles it.
It's just amazing thinking back to a guy who 5 months after tearing his Achilles became basically the starting running back for the Super Bowl champs, and then 5 months later, I guess maybe 7 months later, became a backup. Let's stay in the NFC West, Schefter, and talk more running backs because, as you well know, Elijah Mitchell out for 2 months because of a knee injury suffered in week one. Where do things stand now for San Francisco? And if you had to envision kind of how they plan to divvy up the carries going forward, what are your expectations?
Well, obviously they're going to start with Jeff Wilson. And Jeff Wilson is a player they really like. And if anybody watches Jeff Wilson play when he's out there, man, is he tough and does he run hard. The issue with him is a little bit like Elijah Mitchell. It seems like he suffers injuries constantly, knee, ankle, whatever it may be. If Jeff Wilson can stay healthy, he'd have great numbers. But he has struggled to stay healthy through his career, in part because of how hard he runs, how physical he is. And so Jeff Wilson will be the starting guy. But the question becomes, what other backs come into play here? And I know that we're waiting to see whether it's Tyrion Davis-Price, their third-round pick, who's been impressive. And I think that sometimes with rookie running backs, it takes a little bit longer. And if you watch them in the preseason, he was a little slower to react and respond and learn the offense. So that means that when you're looking at that backfield right now, the guy that interests me is Jordan Mason, who is an undrafted free agent, who, when you watched him in the preseason, essentially beat out Trey Sermon for that roster spot and made it such that they felt comfortable to release Trey Sermon, a former third-round pick, to clear the way for Jordan Mason, an undrafted free agent, who, if you watch them this summer, had juice to his game. The guy looked like he could play.
Yeah.
Now, again, I said the same thing about Kyron Williams, goes out and hurts his ankle. And I think I said to you in this spot last week, Field, the Rams like Kyron Williams, and he could go out on the first carry fumble, and we may never hear from Kyron Williams again. Well, it wasn't a fumble, it was an injury. And I think the same thing is true with any of these unproven backs. Just because Jordan Mason looked good in the summer, just because they like him, we don't know how he's going to respond when the lights are on and it's real action. I just think he has the capability to become a fantasy factor as early as this Sunday.
Shefty, you put that rookie making his NFL debut on his first carry jinx on James Cook instead, who did fumble on his first carry for the Buffalo Bills. He wasn't playing much up to that point, but certainly didn't play much after that as well. There are a lot of injuries, and it's early in the practice week, especially for teams that have not yet hit the practice field today, Thursday. But I want to ask you about the Bucs, because we know Chris Godwin left last week's game due to a hamstring injury. Yesterday's injury report included Mike Evans, Julio Jones, Chris Godwin, and Russell Gage.
You have
previously caught a touchdown from Tom Brady. Are you going to be back on the field this Sunday, or are the Saints going to, are the Bucs going to be able to field a healthy enough receiver group?
I've turned down all inquiries. I'm still recovering from my torn meniscus last year from doing the gritty. But again, we'll see how that plays out. I think when you look at the Buccaneers this Sunday, basically every offensive player was listed on their injury report yesterday. Leonard Fournette had some cramps in the game on Sunday night. They took him out. He didn't finish. Rashad White came on and finished. But then Leonard Fournette was listed on the injury report yesterday with a hamstring injury, limited practice. Interesting. Russell Gage, who's had a hamstring issue over the summer, he didn't practice. Julio Jones landed on his knee on that long pass. And Julio Jones really, I think, had been the star of their training camp, somebody who really impressed them and showed them that he was kind of back to being Julio. It didn't sound overly serious, but when Julio Jones doesn't practice, that becomes curious. Mike Evans also. Chris Godwin, I don't think he's playing Sunday. I think we could count him out right now. And the question is, how much longer he'll miss? Maybe he's back the next week. But here's a guy that was coming off the knee injury. It was, I think, inspiring to see him get back that quick. Maybe he could have used another week or two, but they were so excited and so anxious to get him back out there. And of course, he suffers the hamstring injury. So it'll be no Godwin on Sunday. We'll see about Gage and Julio and Evans.
Najee Harris has said publicly that he expects to play on Sunday. He'll be, quote, good to go against the Patriots. But do you get any sense that there might be a reduction in his workload, given that he is coming off of the injury in week one, plus the Lisfranc injury that bothered him for about 4 weeks in training camp?
You know, here's the interesting part about that one, Field, right? On Sunday night, I'm calling around, making some calls, checking up on Najee Harris, and I'm told on Sunday night, he's okay. And I'm like, wait, he's okay?
Yeah, this is
the same foot that he injured this summer. He's rolling around on the ground Sunday in Cincinnati. He limps off, doesn't come back in, and you're telling me he's fine? Yeah, we think he's fine. I'm like, okay. Now, Monday, he goes and has tests. The tests come back negative. And Najee Harris feels like he, quote unquote, should be good to go on Sunday. So again, all we can do is go by what we see and what we hear.
Yeah.
What we saw was this guy was hurt. He's a big, tough, strong kid, Najee Harris. He believes he's going to go. Same foot. I think there are enough signals there. I believe he's going to be out there against New England on Sunday. I expect him to play. Do I think that Pittsburgh's running him 25 times? I find that hard to believe, but I find it hard to believe that he's even going to be out there, and I know he is.
Sometimes these players maybe need to be held back, even if they feel prepared and ready to go. I'm not saying the Bucs made the wrong decision with Chris Godwin, but him leaving the game in week one might have been amongst the more predictable potential outcomes for guys coming back from a major injury.
And if we go back to what Mike Tomlin said this week, he liked the way that Jaylen Warren looked, the rookie running back. And so I would think there would be some work for Warren. I don't know whether that means five carries or eight carries.
Right.
But I think that they'll get him involved a little bit here on Sunday and see how he fares against New England to lighten the load on Najee that much.
You know, Shefty, the advice, or what was the description that Mike Tomlin used of how Jaylen Warren played? He did not urinate down his leg.
Exactly, exactly.
I mean, that's one way to look at it, which is good. Shefty, unfortunately, my War Room team rosters both Dak Prescott and Najee Harris, so I kind of need Najee to play about 20 times, about 20 carries on Sunday, or at least catch like 7 passes. Your War Room team, how are you feeling? I know that obviously some things broke against you, against your favor with Kyren Williams getting hurt, and Elijah Mitchell, right? Wasn't he also on your roster? Am I making that?
Okay. No, how about this? On my War Room team, we had Kyren Williams go for a 0.
Yep.
We had Devontae Smith go for a 0.
I was curious, yeah.
We had George Pickens catch 1 pass, and there was another receiver I had that also had a 0. I had 2 receivers get a 0. Like, I mean, who was the other guy started? Can I look at it very quickly?
Why didn't you start better players, Adam?
Oh, wow. No, Shefty did. He can...
Was that Dopp?
That was Dopp, yeah.
Crying about my players?
Yes. Here's the deal. What else is new?
Yeah, I may have cut somebody over here because an angry cut. Oh, Darnell Mooney.
Darnell Mooney. Mm. Yeah.
So Darnell Mooney, Devontae Smith combined for I think 1 total catch.
1 catch, yeah.
That's tough.
Kyren Williams was a 0.
Yep.
Kyle Pitts had 3 points.
Yeah.
It was not a sterling debut for Per Sources. I'll say that.
You know what though, Shefty? My sources are saying that Per Sources is due for a bounce back because your roster's good. Those guys are good, and like you look through some of those a little bit closer. Like Darnell Mooney played through literally the Niagara Falls on Sunday against the 49ers.
I talked to my team. I told them we're very upset. That's not how we play. We expect a lot more on Sunday, and I do think again going in that this would not be a week that I would want to get my team. We'll see how that means, but I think Devonta Smith is angry. I think he's going to respond. I think Darnell Mooney is angry. I think he's going to respond. I think Kyle Pitts is angry. Mm-hmm. He's going to respond. I'm going to get points from running backs. I'm not going to have a 0, from the running back slot. So I'm just telling you, I can't tell you how it's going to work out, but I will promise you this. Per Sources will be ready Sunday when we play Mama's team.
Not just the most connected man in the NFL, a great TV presence, but also a master motivator. Adam Schefter, good luck to Per Sources, and we look forward to talking to you, not just on Sunday, where you can brag about how badly you beat me in long shots, but also every Thursday here on Fantasy Focus.
Well, by the way, we weren't great on long shots, but we're going to be back at it Sunday on Fantasy Focus on Sunday.
Oh, that's right. You weren't great, and you still beat me by, like, I mean, well,
4 points,
well like 1.5 points. It was, let's just put it this way. You and I have room for growth this week on long shots.
And we will. And we will come through this week.
Promise. Back and better than ever. Shefty, you're the best. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, guys. Have a great day.
You as well.
I love Adam Schefter talking his fantasy team into existence.
Mm-hmm. It's the best. Well, no, I just love, we're so lucky to have him as a colleague.
Of course we are. Love Adam. We love Adam.
But I love the passion that he has for fantasy sports. It fires me up every time I talk to him. And it's great because so much of what he has to do covering the league is things that are far more serious than fantasy football, right? We had an offseason that was defined in some ways by very, very, very serious stories. And for Shefty to have the chance to come on and just talk fantasy football every single week, to me, that's a breath of fresh air. I'm sure for him as well.
How about Adam being just like all the rest of us, where it's like he's the most plugged in man in football, and he still had guys that had poor weeks. That's just the way it works sometimes, man.
Yeah, sometimes just bad luck. I mean, Kyren Williams, like I said this on Sunday, I think, like, not a bad call. It's bad luck.
It would have been an elite call. Right,
like,
it was a very good call.
It's looking like an elite call by all accounts. It sounds like he was going to play a big role. So great call by Adam, and Kyren's going to be a guy to watch in the second half of the season.
Totally.
For sure.
Yeah, although I like, maybe this is because I kind of need him to. But I got a feeling like Cam Akers is going to respond.
I hope so. Yeah.
He's going to have like, 4 carries on Sunday, but still he's going to respond more than 0 yards. I'm calling it right now for Cam Akers.
I need
you want to board bet
something.
That one?
Yeah. No.
Okay.
Definitely no. All right. Let's talk about some other games on Sunday. You guys good with that?
Yeah. Have at it.
We got about 20 minutes left in this Thursday game. We want to talk about some Sunday games because I'm not here for Friday and we want to have a little bit more.
You picked your favorite games here?
I actually didn't pick these games. No,
this is like a little.
These are your favorite games.
We're going to get an advance on the game previews on Thursday, so we have a bit more time to breathe.
Exactly.
And as we tell you all the time on Fridays, when we have an injury, it's like, hey, check back on Sunday. Well, if we tell you that a day before Friday, the message is the same.
It's the same thing.
Check back on Friday.
Yes.
On Sunday. Exactly.
All right, let's get into these.
Game preview.
We got Jets at the Browns. I think the only lineup lock that we have currently is Nick Chubb, but there are two other guys I think that are close to that conversation. Let's start with the Jets. When you look at the running backs here, you saw Michael Carter and Breece Hall both get a ton of volume in this passing game. In fact, everybody got a ton of volume in this passing game because Joe Flacco threw 59 times.
Yeah.
Which one of these two running backs do you like more heading into week two, Field Yates?
I've got Michael Carter 18th on my board, 17 spots ahead of Breece Hall for a few reasons here. First, he played more. He started. He got more work as a runner. He got comparable work in the passing game. Breece Hall actually led all running backs with before Javonte Williams had 10 targets on Sunday.
12.
He had 12 for Breece Hall? I thought it was...
You said before Javonte Williams had...
Sorry. Before Javonte Williams played on Monday night, Breece Hall had 10 which was the most. Yeah. But game script really, really, really inflated the passing game value for Breece Hall. The Browns are not a particularly high-scoring offense. I don't expect them to be for quite some time. This is not going to be a game where Joe Flacco throws the ball 59 times. But I do have Michael Carter ranked ahead. He's good in the passing game, starting running back for the Jets. And Breece Hall did fumble last week as well, which we know that makes coaches very, very upset.
Yeah, I agree. I have Carter 19th, Hall 38th, but I mean, Hall at some point just might take control here because it was really close. Like Carter had an 11 snap edge, but and four more carries and all, and we expect, if anything, the carries to flip over to Hall at some point
this season. Yeah.
But the routes, the pass routes, 27 for Carter, 26 for Hall. To your point, he had more targets, but by the way, again, to your point, the Jets had 62 pass plays in this game. Most weeks, it'll be about half that.
Right.
Yep. Right. So very fluky, not getting too carried away. You'll notice that our target projections for like the Jets running backs, not super high, right? And Carter still has an edge there. But anyway, agree. Carter should be in lineups. Hall, probably not yet.
I want to give a quick shout out to Mama Dop and Papa Shoop. They're, Mama Dop's doing her first fantasy league this year.
Oh, awesome. Nice.
Which is really awesome. And our buddy Papa Shoop, in case you remember from our Twitter days, we had the GC commentary, Genius Commentary Club. So he's helping Mom do it, his own fantasy league. You saying this just made me think about it. Their team name is To Your Point, which I feel like is a thing that we definitely say on here, but it's like To Your Point, dot, dot, dot.
That's funny.
Which I think is great.
Anyways, work on not saying that.
Mom and Dop. The
toxic trait.
Post on social is like, you say this word a lot. Like I say
all the time.
I say right a lot. Like stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Someone was like, yeah, you say PPR a lot. I was like, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
You say fantasy a lot. It's weird.
You say football all the time.
Yeah.
All right. Well, how about with any of these pass catchers? I'm looking at Elijah Moore right now, looking like the highest ranked pass catcher. I have him at wide receiver 37. Mike, you've got him at 37. Field at 38. I just don't see enough in this offense, again, both based on how this game is likely going to play out. It looks like there'll be more ground and pound from the Browns. I can't see Elijah Moore being anything more than a desperation flex play for me if I need him at this point.
I mean, in 12 team leagues, I'd have a hard time benching him.
Sure. Okay.
I want him in there.
Like, 10 team leagues.
Yeah. Like he was, and even 10 teamers, he's close. Now I have him 37, so I kind of agree. He's more of a flex option, but I'd want him in my lineup. Like he was clearly their number one last week. 79 snaps they played. He was on the field for 70. He ran all but seven of their 62 routes. So he did emerge as the number one, even though he had kind of a down target day. So I'm still feeling, I feel a little more secure with him as their one, which is something I thought maybe at some point in the offseason, Garrett Wilson would take control of. He hasn't done that yet. It is more as the one here.
Yeah, I think Corey Davis played the most snaps, Moore ran the most routes, and I thought there was a pretty decisive gap between those two and Garrett Wilson.
Wilson was right there, too.
Wilson was
like right there with Davis, which is actually should make you feel good. He had like eight targets, and his usage was pretty good.
It was just weird. Yeah, close. It seemed like there's clamoring for more. The problem with right now is that like what the Jets couldn't get in week one was what Garrett Wilson does really well, vertical opportunities on the field, right? Because pressure was a problem for them and they were throwing the football. I mean, it was, that was something. We almost got a Mike White experience coming up.
I'm starting Mike Carter from this team, and that is it for me here in week two. When I look at the Browns, though, not just Nick Chubb, Kareem Hunt, Mike, looked fantastic in week one. I've been struggling to figure out how high can I rank him without it being too high, because you've got two running backs in the backfield, but the pass catchers in week one were abysmal. And to the point.
To your point.
It's to your point. Get it right, Daniel.
Yeah,
Jacoby Brissett was off target. He was bottom seven in off target percentage when it comes to these wide receivers. I think the idea of Kareem Hunt potentially being that short passing game usage actually really helps him.
You know what Jacoby Brissett was in week one? What? Jacoby Brissett.
Exactly. Yes. We talked about this coming into, you know, on Fantasy Football Now Sunday morning. It was like, are you worried about Amari Cooper?
Yes.
The quarterback was dead last in yards per attempt last year. This is a problem position for the Browns right now for the next couple of months. And of course, Cooper struggled. Talk about him in a second. But to your point, Daniel, Kareem Hunt, 15 touches and two touchdowns in week one. He outsnapped Nick Chubb in the game, which is going to happen sometimes. But look, this is always tough for me. As a numbers guy looking for the most likely outcome, two running backs, it's hard to rank them both very high.
Correct.
Every team has a one. That's 32 running backs. So how do you put two from the same backfield in the top, say, 25 or 20? It's hard to justify that statistically, but these guys are elite talents at the position, and they continue to get it done. A stat from Kyle here, 12 times has Hunt and Nick Chubb in top 25 running backs as teammates. That includes, of course, week number one. So Hunt, again, in, we're ranking him as a flex. That's where he belongs. And it'd be tough to bench him, I think, after what he did last week.
Yeah, I think the only way that you would be concerned is if you think that the Browns are going to take care of the Jets and they do so with like gaining a lead and just bleeding the clock. And if that's the case, then it's going to be Nick Chubb because, as we discussed on Monday's show, like still very much in the conversation and perhaps leader in the clubhouse for the best pure runner in football. Like, I don't take Nick Chubb for granted when I watch him, but Hunt will get enough too. I'm with Mike. I actually have him in the same spot. I have him 28 as 28. Well. So yep. we're similar.
The Browns are so good at running back that remember how good D'Ernest Johnson was last year?
Yeah, he doesn't play.
Healthy scratch. That's how loaded they are at running
back. We're going to trade him to the Falcons.
You know what? Please.
Trying to get someone there.
Let's engineer a trade where we can move D'Ernest Johnson for any kind of wide receiver because right now we don't have any sort of wide receivers that we're starting in fantasy from this team. Amari Cooper is our highest ranked Browns wide receiver and he doesn't even crack the top 40, Mike Clay.
Yeah, 6 targets, 17 yards in week one, and we can't say we're shocked by this. Now, Carolina does have pretty good young corners that they're developing there, J.C. Horn being their number one. But again, it wasn't happening. And there's going to be days where he shows up with a 6-for-60 or something and is startable, but he's going to have some duds with Jacoby Brissett in a run-heavy offense. They're just going to run it as much as they possibly can for the next 3 months.
For as many things that were unpredictable in week one, the Browns were very predictable.
Yes.
They basically played out as we expected. Donovan Peoples-Jones, a name to keep an eye on. He had six catches for 60 yards and 11 targets in week one. Talented guy that we discussed last preseason.
Although, I will say this, everyone picked Carolina. Like, it was silly to even suggest the Browns would win that game. And they did. You know, they still have a good defense, good offensive line, right?
Great kicker.
They can win games against bad teams, and that's what we saw in week one, and we could see again here in week two.
All right, let's talk about Panthers and the Giants. A couple lineup locks here. Obviously, Christian McCaffrey, still a lineup lock. Don't be worried about week one. Saquon Barkley, absolutely smashed in week one.
Awesome.
He needs to be there. DJ Moore, don't let week one shake you, Field. And I want to start with DJ Moore, I think. 6-plus targets in 24 straight games.
Yeah.
He only ran 31 routes, which was actually tied with Robbie Anderson. I would like to see DJ Moore run more routes than Robbie Anderson from that standpoint.
Yeah, but weird game. He played 100% of the snaps, though.
Yes, he did.
He had a 22.2% target share. Baker Mayfield was not exactly dialed in on Sunday. I think Baker Mayfield will play better. I think Baker Mayfield is a fine quarterback. He's not a top 10 quarterback. He's not a bottom 10 quarterback. I think that this offense just was rough out of the gates. It picked things up a little bit in the second half. I believe they went touchdown, interception, touchdown, punt or something. It was like field goal, touchdown. It was like 3 out of 4 drives they scored.
Right.
Yeah, sorry. But this was a game where they hit, you mentioned, didn't you? Did you say 31 routes run?
31 routes run. Wide receiver 40 on the week.
I believe they played 63 total snaps. Might have been 53 total snaps. It was a very low number.
That's a little
for
below
them.
Average, yeah. So yeah. 64, 65 is usually the league average. But
It was low.
I'm not worried about this at all. It's a rare single-digit game for DJ Moore. He still had 6 targets. He still had a carry in the game.
Yeah.
The only thing, I'm 2 spots lower than you guys. The only thing I knocked him a tiny bit for was the matchup. This could be a down game as well.
Yep.
Adoree Jackson looked good. If you're wondering why Robert Woods did nothing in week one, well, he was shadowed by Adoree Jackson in that game. It was a low volume passing game, but that's not uncommon.
Yeah.
Talk about that all offseason.
Yep.
That'd be the case for the Titans. But he had that 113-yard catch because he was shadowed by Jackson. I think Moore sees the same treatment this week. So, again, maybe in DFS you're staying away. But you never bench DJ Moore, just to be clear. I view him as a lineup lock, even though he does have a tough matchup.
I totally agree with you from that standpoint. Baker Mayfield is good enough to be able to sustain DJ Moore as a top 15 wide receiver and CMC as a top 5 running back. We just got to see it on a more consistent basis.
More volume, yeah.
Speaking of volume, Field. Robbie Anderson.
Yeah,
Robbie Anderson was the guy with volume.
Happy with this one. And by the way, wouldn't be surprised if next week we're talking about Robbie Anderson is closer to a lineup lock. He also played 100% of the snaps in week one. He led the team in total targets. He had the one big play in that 75-yard touchdown. I know Robbie Anderson became radioactive last year when he was unusable in fantasy. But he was still 28th in the NFL in targets last year. Like, he's one of the top. He is seeing more targets than another team's number one overall target on their roster during a terrible year. The Panthers signed Robbie Anderson to a 2-year, $29 million extension in August of last year, 2021. They like this player. Robbie Anderson is good. I have Robbie Anderson as wide receiver 39 this week, and there's a chance that I think he was a smart add on the waiver wire this week. Even if he's an add to stash, I think Robbie Anderson could be due for a bounce back season. Not a top 15 receiver season, but top 30-ish could be in play.
Yeah, and he picked up steam late last season. He's had 8 or more targets in 5 of his 6 try this again. 8+ targets in 5 of his last 6 games.
To your point, I agree.
Yeah. Last season. get it right.
And good matchup, by the way. Aaron Robinson, who I think gets appendicitis.
Yeah, appendectomy. That's right.
He's out. He's the starter opposite of Adoree Jackson. So when Jackson's on, DJ Moore. Cordell Flott, third round rookie, who's only played a few snaps in the NFL, will be on Robbie Anderson a lot. So another good matchup this week, too.
Heck yeah. All right. Anybody from the Giants side? Any pass catchers you want to start this week?
Wandell Robinson. That's going to be a no for me, dog.
Yeah, me too. We can just move on from me.
A pump for Sterling Shepard. I think he was a savvy waiver ad this week. Should be on benches for now. This is a guy, again, he has had 6 or more targets in 38 of his past 46 games.
Yeah, he's very
consistent. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Had a good first game back from the Achilles. So
long touchdown was impressive.
Yeah, borderline flex. Kadarius Toney, keep him on rosters for now. I think his playing time will go up, and maybe even this week. Still a special, special talent.
You really hope so with Kadarius Toney, because it's so obvious that Kadarius Toney, it's not about talent. Right? Like, it's clearly about accountability and reliability.
Yes.
Yep. Like, there's no two ways about that. He had the ball twice on Sunday, and both plays, like, you were like, holy crap. He's playing a game of Frogger, right? Yeah. Like, he's leaping through traffic. But if he was, there's something that's preventing him from playing a lot more, and it's not just injury related.
By the way, our colleague, Jordan Renan, who we love, gave him the little test in the post game, right? Or was that practice, I guess? He asked him, you know, are you mad about not playing that much? And he's like, he passed it, right? He's like, no, it's all about the team. Like, why would I be mad about targets and snaps? We won the
young
game.
Jock.
Right? That's a good answer.
That's the answer. All right, Joker. We got one more game we're going to talk about. Commanders at the Detroit Lions, friends. Lineup blocks we have here. Antonio Gibson, after a strong week 1, locked in as running back 13. Terry McLaurin, wide receiver 11. DeAndre Swift, running back 6. And TJ Hockenson, and Amon-Ra St. Brown, wide receiver 19.
There's so many. We didn't even have room on the graphic. If
honestly,
you're
from this standpoint,
there's, so many.
There's quite a few guys that really are lineup blocks. I want to touch on Amon-Ra St. Brown here really quickly. I've got him at wide receiver 15. I have one spot ahead of Terry McLaurin. I think I'm the only one that has him ahead of Terry McLaurin this week. 8 receptions on 64 yards for 1 touchdown on 12 targets.
And how about this? Go ahead.
So here's what I thought was really fantastic. I wish I would have said this earlier.
Okay.
Coming into the season, everything was about, oh, great that we saw this from Amon-Ra St. Brown at the end of the year. You know what he didn't have? He didn't have DeAndre Swift, and he didn't have TJ Hockenson. Yeah. You know what he had week 1? He had DeAndre Swift looking like a freaking superstar, going out there having 175 yards, and he had TJ Hockenson also contributing. We saw those two guys, and that question for me has been answered. With
Daniel,
12 targets, I am all in.
All offseason, I just said. We talk about numbers all the time, and sometimes you just got to trust what your eyes tell you, and that Amon-Ra St. Brown is good at the game. And how about this? On Sunday, he has a chance to make some history. So he's got at least 8 catches. If you go back to last year, and I believe 7 straight games?
I think I just tweeted. I had a scheduled tweet on this. I didn't even know you had this in the holster.
I've been waiting for this one all week.
All right,
if he has 8 catches again on Sunday, he will tie the NFL record for most consecutive games with at least 8 catches. Like, I don't care. Michael Thomas and A.B.
Yes, impressive company, right?
So, we're not talking about like a 2 or 3 game sample size. We're talking about half a season straight. So say whatever you want about who was around him and who wasn't around by the end of last year. Like, the Lions found themselves a diamond in the rough in the 4th round, and he is clearly the best wide receiver on that roster.
Yeah, I wanted to, and I'll just expand on your stat a little bit. 5 players in NFL history have 8+ catches in 7 straight games. Thomas and Brown have 8. The guys that have 7, St. Brown, Travis Kelce, Anquan Boldin. Is company.
Come on
right
now.
There.
Like,
that
it's
is unreal.
Don't overthink it. He's
all
a
right.
lineup block for me.
Let's go quickly through the Commanders then. Carson Wentz, Fields, you already said, and a couple of them. We're at that spot where if you need a guy, if you lost Dak, obviously he is our number one fill-in. But
we have
Carson Wentz. Mike, you've got him at 12. I've got him at 13. Field, you have him at 9. If you're in a 10-12 team league, he is an option this week against the Detroit Lions.
He is, and I'll be very clear. He did not play as well as his fantasy production suggests he played this past weekend. He still had some Carson Wentz plays. There's no two ways about that. Here's why I'm encouraged, though. It's obviously a good matchup, right? Jalen Hurts, not just with his arm, but certainly with his legs, really carved up that Detroit defense. But A.J. Brown just ran circles around the Lions secondary, which we knew coming into the season was going to be a vulnerability for them.
Yep.
And if you look at Washington, all of a sudden, not only do they have 3 like star wide receivers potentially, but they're playing him a ton, right? They're playing 11 personnel, like 80%+ of their snaps.
Explain what that means for our listeners and kids, because we've said it a couple times, playing 11 personnel. Just
in
case you
don't
know,
when
what
you hear
mean?
Personnel, one, the first number, you use personnel, you denote it with 2 numbers. The first number refers to the number of running backs you have on the field. The second number refers to the number of tight ends you have on the field. And then you just do the math. So one running back plus one tight end leaves three remaining skill spots, which means they're all wide receivers. So if it was 21, two running backs, one tight end, which leaves two wide receivers available, they were playing 11 personnel, three wide receivers on like 80%+ of their snaps this past weekend. Carson Wentz can produce because he'll let the other guys do the work for him.
Yeah.
Curtis Samuel's ADOT was 1.0 yards in week one. If they let Curtis Samuel get five or six wide receiver screens, that could turn into 65 or 70 yards with a touchdown in there for Carson Wentz.
Curtis Samuel is a flex play for me, Mike. What about you this week?
Yeah, maybe definitely more. 29th on my board. You know, we kind of slept on the Washington offense because of the health concerns, right? But if you assume all these guys are healthy together, this is a really good offense. The offensive line is very underrated. It's been since last year. And they have three good receivers, including Dotson, who was a first-round pick this year and scored two touchdowns in week one. We know McLaurin, Samuel, we have Logan Thomas did way more than I expected in week one. I mean, I thought he was going to miss a month coming into the season with his ACL injury. He played a lot and is now a sneaky add on waivers too, especially if you need like a replacement for George Kittle. So this could be a pretty good offense. And granted, it was Jacksonville. We don't want to get too carried away, but another really good matchup here against Detroit. They could do it again here.
This might be short lived, right? Like the schedule tough enough, but take advantage of it.
Yeah. I mean, it is a really talented group, but take advantage of it now. Very talented.
Yep.
All right, Mike, let's pay some bills before we have one final segment called Squirrel Stock.
Okay, I can't do that.
Oh, you don't want to do that?
Sure you can.
Oh, here you go, Mike. No big deal.
Need help.
How about that one?
All right, let's do it. Geico asks, how would you love a chance to save some money on insurance?
Freaking love it.
Of course you would. And when it comes to great rates on insurance, Geico can help, like with insurance for your car, truck, motorcycle, boat, and RV. Even help with homeowners or renters coverage. Plus, add an easy-to-use mobile app, available 24-hour roadside assistance, and more. Geico is an easy choice. Switch today and see all the ways you could save. It's easy. Simply go to geico.com or contact your local agent today.
Football fans, NFL season is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL, is giving new customers a can't-miss offer to celebrate the return of the NFL season. Right now, new customers can bet just $5 and get $200 in free bets instantly. And as an added bonus, everyone can experience the thrill of DraftKings early win promotion. It's simple. Bet on an NFL team to win. If your team leads by 10 at any point during the game, you get paid instantly, even if your team loses. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use promo code FFF to get $200 in free bets instantly when you place a $5 bet this Sunday. That's code FFF only at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Minimum age and eligibility restrictions apply. 21 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER. In Tennessee, call or text Tennessee Redline at 1-800-889-9789. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. Bonus issued is free bets. One early win token issued to opt-in. Moneyline bets only. Deposit and wagering restrictions apply. Eligibility and terms at DraftKings.com/football terms. Who's that? Who's that squirrel? All right. That's me. So I'm going to run through a couple of names. I got Squirrel Stock. Obviously, this is only week one. We have a very small sample, guys, but guys that I have trending up that I am pumped about. Some of these are pretty obvious names. Bear with me here. Michael Pittman, huge stock up after week one based on where he was being drafted. 9 receptions, 121 yards, and 1 touchdown on 13 targets. You know, those 13 targets were top 5 in the NFL. He was 3rd in routes run. Matt Ryan was also top 5 in off-target percentage. Matt Ryan is absolutely going to be able to sustain a top 12 to top 10 season, I think, for Michael Pittman this year. I love Michael Pittman here after week one, especially what we've seen. Mm-hmm. All right, Christian Kirk, number
I'm
2.
I'm buying that stock, if that's what you're asking.
Are you buying that stock?
Same. I mean, I think it's about what we expected coming in. Right. Maybe a drafted, little. Like feel, wide receiver, his 13, target share was the same as last year. Still a run-heavy offense, but He lived up to his rising late offseason ADP.
Love the run heaviness of, like, the fact that they have Jonathan Taylor to be able to be such a good running back in that offense.
You'd rather him in Kansas City with Andy Reid throwing it a million times a game.
Of course I would, yes.
I wouldn't say I love a run heavy offense.
You got to get an Andy Reid.
If he has a 27% target share, it won't matter. It'll be great.
You wear the T-shirt, you get sassy. All right, my next one, I got Christian Kirk. Stock up, obviously, another guy. 6 catches on 107 for 117 yards and a touchdown on 12 targets. That's a 31% target share. If I'm looking at wide receivers that have more than a 30% target share, I am thrilled. They brought this guy over for a reason. I see Christian Kirk continuing to smash here in this offense. They want to get him involved. Loved what Zay Jones also did. 9 targets there in week one. But Christian Kirk is the guy. I'm going stock up Any issues here from you guys?
I loved him. I drafted him a lot. Loved him last week. And tougher matchup this week against Kenny Moore. We loved his matchup last week, but yeah, love
him,
Christian Kirk.
Him and Michael Pittman going back to back. Same game.
Yes.
I also have Amon Ross St. Brown. I already did him. We're going to skip that. But just again, target monster. 12 targets from that standpoint. And then Daryl Henderson, week one. Everything that we saw, Kyren Williams ended up being out. Cam Akers barely played. Week one, 18 touches, 73 total yards, 5 receptions. I have seen nothing that suggests that this running back situation is going to be different in week two. I am trusting Daryl Henderson here. He is a stock up for me. As much as I want to love Cam Akers,
right,
I'm in on Daryl Henderson here in week two.
So fine with week two. I will just say that I am not totally dismissing two things happening over the next few weeks. One is that Cam Akers gets out of the doghouse. There are already some remarks from both Sean McVay and Cam Akers to suggest that he understands what the assignment is. Now he must go out and execute it. Two is that, what do we know about Daryl Henderson? He might be good for 2 or 3 weeks, but he's not built to last as a running back. So those are the only reservations I have for making this an all-in for the rest of the season.
Yeah, I mean, but Henderson did make it 10 weeks last year, though. He was RB14 when he was playing three quarters of the snaps. So we've seen this before, and that's why I'm confident with him as my RB15. I'm very high in him out of the gate. His 82% snap share in week one was third most among running backs.
Oh, so week two for sure, I'm in.
Tons of volume. Yep. So we're a little worried about that pass block or run blocking, but you know, better matchup this week. They played the Bills.
You
know,
I'm legit worried about that entire offensive line.
That line, that's good.
It might not matter against Atlanta as much, but
Those wide receivers, I don't want to say this is tough. It's week one to be able to say, like, where's your stock? Like, guys that did well, your stock is up. Guys that didn't well. But, like, I'm excited to be able to see week two, how we get a little bit more information, how we can, you know, be able to look
at the name of the game,
how we're looking at different people. All right, that's going to do it for us here on Thursday. I think that's going to be
CSS DFS time.
I think that's time for us to do CSS DFS. We're going to have a different setup, I think, maybe this year for CSS DFS. Whoa. I don't know. We'll
that's
find
news
out
to me.
Maybe
I'll
not this week. Maybe next week. I don't know. We're going to throw some things out there. For Field, Mike, I'm Daniel. We love you guys. Mike, Field, and Stefania will be back on Friday for everything that you guys need to know for the Friday matchups. We love you guys. We'll see you then.
It's really cool that you guys are going to donate all of your winnings from DFS this year to me.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, just to you?
Only to the Field Yates Foundation.
My personal funds, right. Yeah. So, like, when I want to buy cool new craft beers or more Miller Lights or new fancy...
See, this is why we didn't invite him to trivia.
This is exactly why we didn't invite him to trivia.
No secret, not a mystery. The one that we depend on for all our podcast needs. Graduate Full Sail U, a Lions fan through and through. With the hippest beard, I'm telling you, he's Daniel Dopp.
Who's that? Who's that squad? Who's that squad?
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.